You got to realize that that's coming.
Yeah.
That's going to come. And you got to realize that, hey, you know, this is what it's going to be, and this is all it's going to be, and I'm going to do the best I can with what I got, but that's part of being content.
That's right. Exactly right. It's being content with what you have. Us as a couple, as far as us as with our spouse, lots of changes happen throughout the life. And if you're not ready for that and ready to be content with the wife of your youth, you know what I'm saying? If you're not content, you will be challenged is the deal. And that's kind of what we're getting at. So very good. What else? There's at least one more up here that's very blatant. Maybe everyone just doesn't want to say it, but.
Infidelity.
Oh, infidelity. Yep, very good. And a lot of these will fit in different categories. But yeah, infidelity for sure. Not being content with your wife. And we talked about that. Not being content with your husband. And all of a sudden, the social pressures. And you start adding all these up, right? All of a sudden, they become a problem. I know not being content with the money. My dad gave me a story once where he was working at the post office and one of his friends that he worked with divorced his wife. And my dad said, well, why did you divorce your wife? Because I just doubled my income. I married this girl that works at the post office. My wife wasn't working at all. I just doubled my income. And that was literally his answer. Now, this was a truthful answer. In other words, now not everybody's going to be as blunt as this person was. But for sure, infidelity can lead from the idea of lack of money, from not being content with what situation you were at. So very much so. What else? Weight gain. I'll go ahead and say it. Sorry, Brother Willis, what was you going to say? Yeah. Yeah, you're not busy enough doing what we would consider, we've been saying for weeks, doing what God has called us to do, right? Whenever we're busy doing, and He's called us to do a lot, I hope that one thing we've realized over the last weeks, over the weeks we've had, is wives, you have a busy, busy role to do. And managing the family and taking care of the kids and also helping the husband and his needs. And husbands, you have a busy, busy, busy job to do, leading the family and loving your wife and helping the kids in their spiritual nourishment and giving everything the wife needs in order to support her. Does everybody understand? You know, we should be very, very busy expensing love to one another. And if we're doing that, we won't have time to ponder and be uncontent about these things, right? So that's kind of that there too. But weight gain was a really big category that no one's mentioning, but the idea that if a spouse gains weight, this and that, all of a sudden she don't look the same way she does, 100% not being content. You know, you bought into something else that was not love, something that was the opposite, and all of a sudden things change, and all of a sudden you're not content anymore. And so that's just another category there. But what we have today, in kind of summation of all this, this general topic, is we have a lot of false expectations that's being floated around today. Social media is huge, and just wanted to throw that out there, just while I have an opportunity, just to talk about it. But talking about keeping up with the Joneses on steroids. Okay, we thought keeping up with the Joneses was bad enough 40 years ago, 50 years ago, keeping up with stuff that they had, usually in regards to actually physical stuff. Hey, he has a green egg cooker and you don't, and their chicken tastes better than yours. Or, oh, they got a new TV, but that's usually what we meant by keeping up with the Joneses. But now, with social media, it's like, oh, husband, you don't do what this husband over here does for his wife. You know, she posts all the time about, you know, she may not say it to you all the time, but in the back of our minds, we have these comparisons and we have these false expectations of our own spouses, and that is going to be the killer. It is the killer. And the statistics show that the people that are more on social media have like 11% more propensity to get a divorce if they're on social media. In other words, guys, it's coming out of the news. It's real stuff. And if we're caught up into it, and me included, fair warning, that'll enter in your brains. You will start becoming lack of content, and it will destroy your marriage, that kind of comparison.
Regarding social media, we have been on it several years, and it's helped us. So if you want to do that, I can help you out with balls and hammer. Anyway, there are two aspects to any relationship. There's a public aspect and a private aspect. And when you start to compare the private aspect to the public or the public aspect to the private, you're going to run into problems. We went to a Thanksgiving dinner where the husbands prepared everything. I wasn't part of that. But the men went around and not only did all the cooking, they did all the cleaning. And I told the guy when I was leaving, I said, you've got to force me here to step up my game at home, and I'm not sure I really appreciate all this. And that was a joke, folks, by the way. For those of you who didn't laugh, I am joking there. But the point is that we will see things easily, flaws in others, from public aspects of a relationship. But we don't know what the private life is like. We have no idea what goes on behind closed doors. We don't know what the conversations are like one-on-one. We don't know what the money management. We normally can't see those things. Mm-hmm. And that's the falsehood of social media. Mm-hmm. Because people only talk about, generally, the really great things or the really hugely bad things. And all the stuff in between is never going to be covered. The stuff that really makes up the bulk of the marriage. Because the extremes are all we ever see anymore as a society. Mm-hmm. That's all we ever talk about. We see it on our news media. We see it in our politics. We see it everywhere, my friend. And you have to look at the middle. You have to look at what life is really about, the 90% you deal with on a day-to-day basis, and stop looking to the 5% here or the 5% there and go, okay, this is what really life is. That's what we talk about in the Bible. Mm-hmm. God's saying your day-to-day relationship, how you live with me on a daily basis, how you walk with me on a daily basis, and how you walk with your spouse on a daily basis is what's key, not this one point here or this one point here.
The whole package. Yeah, and at the end of the day, that other couple that's not your husband, that's not your wife. You know, we've talked about that. And that's what it comes down to, is I'm telling you right now, you are going to marry and your wife is not going to be like someone else's wife, or your husband's not going to be like someone else's husband. And that's just the way it's going to be. And yeah, you may have a husband that can do all this hardware stuff and fix all these things, but there's going to be some flaws somewhere else. At the end of the day, you got to be content with that. You got to be content with whatever happens. What happens if the husband or the wife gets a physical condition? And all of a sudden, hey, you have to be a caregiver for that spouse. You got to learn to be content. We have some really good examples here, very good examples here, in which that is being displayed, where regardless of whether one of the spouses is disabled, regardless of whether when the spouse got cancer and everything changed, love abounded in those because they were content and they poured on love. Like I said, all these things are opposite of love. And that's what we're trying to express here that truly builds a marriage, is this beyond this physical life type love is what we should be focusing on. So I appreciate all the thoughts. Just wanted to kind of wrap up with that real quick and talk about that. But the reason why I wanted to spend some ample amount of time on contentment is because at the end of the day, when you're a child, that's when the contentment training begins. So whether you were taught contentment or not as a child will sometimes determine whether you are going to be a very content adult. Right? So if you were a child that got everything you wanted, good luck with that. You could still manage it when you get older, but the deal is it was a good transition. We would come back to this idea of when we train the child, which is going to be our lesson tonight. We're going to start it tonight, and we're going to continue it on for Sunday morning. But the idea of training the child in these things, because ultimately they're going to be adults, and we want them to not fall into these pit holes that we're talking about here. So, as we continue on, we are now going to talk about what to leave your children. What to leave your children. If you're in your books, you can turn to Lesson 7, and that will be the general basis. Lesson 7 in your books, and that'll be the general basis in some of the scriptures. So if you've been studying ahead, that's going to be where we're at tonight. To start off with this subject, what we will leave our children, I would like to kind of make sure that we continue connecting the dots with regards to our theme, with regards to the idea of God's love that binds us in everything, including how we look at our children and how we're supposed to keep His commandments. So in keeping with our theme, we will look at that because it's His love that binds us and unites us. And we've talked about it before, the idea of God's love creates. He created us because He loved us. He created a people that had choice. The same applies with having children and raising children. We should have children because they are a blessing from God and they are to be a blessing to God. So not only are children blessings, but we are to raise children to bless, to be a blessing to God. Marriage was created by God, man and woman. The two shall become one flesh, as we discussed. And this includes being joined together to multiply and have children. We talked about that as well, that the idea of the two becoming one flesh, not only in the marriage bond, but also in that relationship in which we are to be fruitful and multiply. Just like it said in Genesis chapter 1, verse 28, He commanded them to be fruitful and multiply with regards to that. So that is included in this idea of oneness and love that we are to have. A loving husband and a loving wife will also be a loving father and mothers for their children. So just like we spent so much time on husbands and wives, the reason is because when love is in the home at that relationship, it will then be extended to the children, because it'll be a firm foundation with regards to that. God's loving promises throughout the scripture has been fulfilled through the multiplication of children and through the seeds of women and mankind. So we see that in Genesis 3, where through the seed of woman, a promise was made. And it was continued in Genesis 12, that through Abraham and Sarah's seed, that these promises will take place. And we know those promises ultimately end up being fulfilled in the New Testament with regards to Jesus being born. But also John the Baptist was prophesied as well with the idea of being born. So we see all these promises, and we don't have time to go through all, but you all understand what I'm saying is that these promises of God, and you can even say, like I said in Ephesians 2, God's eternal purpose by sending His Son to this earth to die for us, you could look at these are eternal promises that's made to mankind through mankind being united and producing children and producing seed to fulfill these promises. God chose to have Jesus be born of woman, her name was Mary, and to have this Son, the Son of God, the Son of Man. It's also important, though, just to cite it, because we've talked about this before, but women play such a critical role with regards to fulfillment of God's promises. If it wasn't for women, we wouldn't be able to fulfill the promises. God would not. He used woman. He used man. He used that union of marriage and producing children to fulfill His promises and to have people come, including His own Son, Jesus. So just like what we said, is the women's role should not be degraded at all. If anything, it should be highly glorified, and everything that women have done throughout all of the ages and throughout history with regards to their role in generating and producing children with regards to with their husbands to help fulfill these promises and what we have today. All of us would not be here if it wasn't for parents and the seed of woman and being produced there. So just important to kind of note there of what a blessing it is that we have that union to look at with regards to these promises that God has made, not only in the Old Testament, but also in the New Testament. But to emphasize this point, God has always been, not only is He the creator of marriage, but obviously He's the creator of family. So it's no surprise that it's a big, important focus throughout all of scriptures. But I just want to turn to one. Go ahead and do the Psalms 127. And this is also in your book as well, as far as Brother Arkwrighter mentioning it. Psalm 127, verses 3 through 5. Psalm 127, verses 3 through 5 reads, "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with the enemies in the gate." So children are a heritage to the Lord. They are a blessing. And before we dive even more in and we start talking about some of the other passages, just as a side note when we talk about this, because we won't have time in the other place, is we do live in a time where, believe it or not, having children can be frowned upon. And I just want to make a point that when it comes to God and God's love and what he thinks about children and when he thinks about family, minimally with God's people, that should never be the case. I have known personally where as soon as the third child was announced, there was not very good attitudes from even the grandparents. There was, really? You're having another one? And you all have seen it too, where families that have more than three or four children, they're like, wow, or those that even have seven, or those that even have five children, or whatever. It's being looked upon as, you've got to be crazy. And I just want to make a quick point and say that should never be the case amongst God's people. Never, never be the case. But unfortunately, our world looks at things quite a bit differently. They look at things financially. I've told young people, listen, once you have more than three kids, good luck. You can't buy a car no more. In other words, so no, there is a financial burden, but me along with other people, and listen, everyone's got a choice. So nothing I'm saying is, hey, you have to have more than one kid, or you don't even have to have kids at all. There's some that have made the tough choice for one reason or another, and I'm not saying anything about tough decisions you have to make, so bear that in mind. But what I am saying is, yes, there are financial challenges the more you have children, but I'm just here to tell you they're a blessing from God, and it should never be looked and frowned upon at all, zero. And I've just experienced it, and I know that you all have too. So just wanted to kind of hammer that out, that they are a blessing from God. We should not be afraid to have more children, be fruitful and multiply. Yes, you'll have to manage your home differently, but it is a blessing from God at the end of the day. So yeah, Dave, real quick.
At the same time, the process started, Abraham and Sarah were promised of one child. We have to be mindful of those sometimes who want but cannot.
That's right, yep.
And I think that the reason we have to be mindful of those is because we live in a society where either it's viewed that society, children, having children is an evil, bad thing, you're adding the carbon footprint, it's horrible, mm-hmm. or having children is the wonderful blessing from God that it is, and they feel like they're being forced into the one, whereas they want to be in the other. And when we meet people like that, we need to make sure we reach out to them. And of course, they have avenues to not only have their own, but enjoy the blessings of parenthood in other ways, like adoption. But
right.
If we meet people like that, we need to make sure we have some compassion there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, Abraham and Sarah have one.
Yeah.
That's all.
Exactly right. And that's kind of what I'm trying to emphasize. I have just unfortunately seen God's people. And I guess I might be unusual in that, but I have witnessed and experienced people snub their nose at the idea that, oh, you're having that, you know, you have that many children. And so just want to throw that out there. That should never be the case. That's all I'm saying. You know, it's your choice on what you decide to do, but they are a blessing is really what I want to focus on, because unfortunately it happens, especially in this day and time. So, on that note, I want to kind of transition the idea that Jesus, you know, how he looked and viewed children. And if you look at Matthew 18, verses 15 through 18. Actually, I'm sorry, go to Luke first. Luke 18, same chapter, Go to Luke 18 first. I wanted to read this first. And these are not in your book, by the way. These are just my introduction thoughts that I wanted to bring out. So Luke 18, verses 15 through 18. Now they were bringing even infants to him, this is to Jesus, that he might touch them. And when the disciples saw it, they rebuked him. But Jesus called them to him and saying, "Let the children come to me and do not hinder them, for to such belongs the kingdom of God. Truly I say to you, whoever does not receive the kingdom of God like a child shall not enter in." It's just one out of two that I'm going to give you just to emphasize that Jesus valued children. And we know lots of verses in regards to how we are to be like little children. We are to be humble like little children. And in fact, when we become baptized, what is it likened to? That we are born again, just like new babes in Christ. So just that idea, that's how we should be. Now go ahead and go to Matthew 18 for me. Matthew 18 and verse 1 through 6. This is when the disciples were discussing about who the greatest is. And it says, Matthew 18 verse 1. "At that time the disciples came to Jesus saying, 'Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?' And calling to him a child, he put him in the midst of them and said, 'Truly I say to you, unless you turn and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever humbles himself like a child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever receives one such child in my name receives me. But whoever causes one of these little ones who believes in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a great millstone fastened around his neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea." Now, I wish we had time to unpack all these with full detail with regards to what he's saying here. But really, the emphasis here is to use a child in front of adults, in front of Jews, and using them as an example and saying, listen, you guys are arguing about, you are adults arguing about who's the greatest going to be, and he takes this little child and puts it in the middle of them and says, you need to be like this. And that would have surely meant something back there, back then. But this emphasizes that children are extremely important to the kingdom of God, and it's something that we should hold in high regard, and it's something we should take care of with our love in our family. So as we move forward, we're going to look at the different areas in which we are to take care and take great concern with regards to our family. Now, when we start looking at training and taking a look at some areas in which we are to focus on with regards to the idea of training our family, I'm just kind of curious, what are some big subjects or big goals, us as a society, as a world, not necessarily those of us just in the church as far as in the church family, but as a society, what would you say are some of the areas in which we focus on in training our children?
Education,
right? Very good. What else?
Honesty.
Manners.
Spiritual upbringing,
yeah. Work ethic. Now, what about the world? You know, what would be some other, so education, mannerism, how to eat, right? Yes.
Diversity,
yep, very good. Diversity, how to treat others, how to survive in society, right? No one mentioned music. I'm highly offended, you know, me being a musician. But a lot of times we will train our children up in music, right? Try to give them a well-balanced education. We train them up in different languages, try to focus and help get their English skills, all in the ideas of education. Their social skills, trust me, that's a battle a lot of the times. But yes, we're supposed to work on their social skills. And also how they eat, their clothing, even beauty, right? I mean, in other words, I'm going ahead and just answering all. Y'all, those are things that not only the world, but you would agree, these are things that we work on. We look at doing, yeah? And so these are things in general that we do train them up in. And these aren't necessarily, don't get me wrong where I'm going with this, not necessarily bad within themselves. But what we're going to do is we're going to kind of look at the foundation of what our goal is with our children. And then hopefully it will flow through all these different categories. Because let's face it, we teach them ABCs. We teach them 1, 2, 3s. You know, we teach them, you know, 1 plus 1 is 2. Unless they're going to be a politician, then you don't have to worry about that. But we teach them how to eat and all that. I mean, just think if the child did their ABCs and they went A, B, C, D, F, G, Z, you know, who out of you, parents, tell me, who would actually not correct their child and train them that that's not the way you do it, this is the way you do it, and we work with the children that way. Even eating and the basicness of just the basicness of all the world will teach their children how to eat. I mean, just think if we didn't teach our children how to eat, I would probably still be eating this way, putting my face in the bowl and just grabbing with my hands. Now, when I do decide to have ribs that are really, really messy, you might still see me do that to this day. But the point is we train our children in all aspects of our lives, and that's something that is critically important to us because we recognize the value with regards to that in our society in order to be able to get along with our society. Now, let's take a look how a loving father and mother are to raise their children up in the Lord. So let's go ahead and turn to Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4. And we're going to spend, just so you all know, we're going to spend some more time in a later lesson here shortly with regards to children obeying their parents. So right now we're focusing on, we just got done talking about husband and wives. We talked about the marriage, right? We're talking about the unity of marriage. Now we're talking about training up children, okay? But we will talk later about some other things with regards to fathers and the relationship with their children and all that. But we're talking specifically here about the training up the child tonight and Sunday morning. So it says, fathers, do not provoke. This is verse 4. So Ephesians 6, verse 4. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So bring them up in instruction and discipline of the Lord. And that's what we're going to focus on a little bit for the rest of our time, is kind of break this verse down, and then we'll be referring to it more on Sunday. So the first phrase that we're going to work on is the idea of, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So the first word that we're going to look at is bring. Bring them up. And this word bring specifically has within it the idea of nourishment all the way up to maturity. Nourishment all the way up to maturity. So when it says bring them up, that means that you need to nourish them in all the way to maturity, to be mature. Now, when you hear this word mature, what are some things that come to mind? Whenever someone says, well, someone is mature or something is of maturity, what are some general concepts that they're meaning when they say that word? Okay, they know how to interact with other people, like with adults. In other words, we would say adult-type conversations, right? What do you think of when you think of something being mature, or when you think of maturity, something coming to maturity? So I'm just basically looking for definitions or concepts of that word maturity. What's that mean to you?
Responsibility.
Very good. Responsibility. Very good. Something that has grown from one place to another place.
With children, their behavior, you can tell right away they're more mature in the way they act, how they carry themselves, how they talk, how they do pretty much everything. You can tell if they're mature in the
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this idea that when someone says something's come to full maturity, what they mean is that it's finished this process of growth, whether it's the beginning of a product in an assembly line, it has fully matured, you know? It's this idea that it has been complete. And that's just a kind of a general idea. That doesn't necessarily mean that we come to a point where we're done and we're complete. You understand that. As far as this idea of getting to a point of maturity, it's this idea of growth, going from one point to another. It's this idea of being able to have conversations to be able to survive. So that's this idea that we're looking at here, this idea of maturity, bring them up from nourishment, where they needed everything, to where they're self-sufficient in society, in the Lord, spirituality, and all these things. That's what it means there. It also says there in the verse the idea of, but bring them up in the discipline. Discipline means, within the Greek, the idea of whole training. When you look at that word discipline, a little bit different than what we normally would just look at the word discipline. When I think of the word discipline, when you first hear the word discipline, usually you think about either timeout or spankings or whippings. I got whippings. I didn't get spankings when I was a kid. I got whippings. It's none of this little fancy spanking stuff, but it was literally. So my dad didn't fool around. But the deal is when I think of discipline, I only think about that painful moment in which I got in trouble. But this idea of discipline here is talking about something different. It has within it this idea of instruction and chastising, but it's important to note that this word actually means the whole training and education of children. The whole training and education of children in general. That includes the training and care even for the body and a lot of things that we talked about just a little bit ago. It also relates to the cultivation of the mind and morals. Some of y'all mentioned that. Employs for this purpose now commands, and it also reproofs and punishes. So this idea of discipline has within it the idea of reproof and discipline as well, but it also has this idea of just general teaching with regards to that. This word discipline recently has had extremely negative. If you look at any of the new modern families that are coming up, the idea of discipline is like, no, that's like a taboo. But really what we're going to be walking through is this idea of total training. But we're also going to include the idea that discipline is part of that. If you let go of the actual discipline of the child, you aren't fully training them with regards to the way the Lord has instructed us. It's kind of like the child wants to eat a certain way. He wants to eat with his hands and eats out of a bowl. Well, when we tell him, no, you need to eat it a certain way, that is discipline. You're training them, but you're also telling them to not do something that is their will. They actually want to eat that way. Or they want to say their ABCs a certain way. And those are silly examples just to emphasize that we are training and disciplining our children in all aspects. It doesn't have to be so-and-so doing some major bad thing. It's all part of our training that we are giving to our children. So it has, historically, it's always been pretty positive, but recently, and a lot of times we have misunderstood the actual definition of what discipline really means. And but the word has always been fairly positive. When someone says, I have a discipline in something, we use that word historically as a very positive thing. Like, for example, I have a business discipline. There are different disciplines in which you will learn a trade. You'll learn a program. So I might have a business discipline and then a focus on marketing, for example. Or you might have a social science discipline. Some of you all that are older, you all have heard that. That was something that was very much part of the speech and the way conversations were, is what discipline do you have? And that means what training do you have? What have you been brought up to be able to do and to focus on? It's also not a surprise that we get the word disciple from this idea of discipline, this training. So a disciple simply means a learner or a pupil. It all goes together with this idea of discipline with regards to that. So discipline is how we are to raise up a child, along with instruction. It says there, discipline and instruction of the Lord. And instruction means exhortation, calling attention to, mild rebuke or warning. It can also be translated chastising. And we're familiar with that word as well. So these are the ideas of instruction and discipline. It's not just the teaching of the child, but it's also the instruction that also guides the child, regardless of what that might look like and take. Yeah, Dave?
If you look at the verse at the total, what are we to do? It's discipline and instruction of the Lord. So there's obviously key verse there. Mm-hmm. We don't provoke to anger. We're not trolls like I like to be sometimes with my older kids. Because angry people don't listen.
Angry people don't learn. Angry people just are angry and they kind of simmer and burn. So when you come back to a disciplinary or instructing time for a child, you have to remove the anger, your own and their own, from the situation so that they can learn what's supposed to be done in a proper way, not just anger and dispute. So many times we have a situation where the parent may be angry. We get angry and we discipline the child goes, what do I do? We never bother telling them. So we have to take the anger out of the equation. Don't provoke our kids to anger either.
Right.
By, you know, you might be discouraging, pick on them in some way, tell them that they're not doing it right, yada, yada, yada. But have the patience to sit and teach and instruct.
Yeah.
And that way we can discipline them the way that they're supposed to be done.
Yeah, and we're going to talk some more about them on Sunday on how we actually do that. But the idea is trying to focus on the idea that we're training them. This isn't just a one moment of getting on to them. This is what I would consider really a lifetime process of your training your child. And that doesn't end when they leave the home either. But the idea we need to focus on the training through love in the Lord when we look at these instructions, and it's not about the end discipline, which a lot of times we end up focusing on in that short-term thing. So very good. But we'll continue that on Sunday. Thanks.